I call the meeting to order, City of University Heights City Council meeting. Today's February 10th, 2026. Welcome, everyone. I call the meeting to order. All five council are present. And first order of business is approval of minutes. I'll do them together and see if there's any changes. Is there any objection to approving the minutes of January 13th and January 27th? Hearing none, the minutes will be approved as sent to you by unanimous consent. Then we'll go to public input. Would anyone from the public like to speak tonight? Okay.
No, I didn't have anything electronic.
Thank you, Mike. We'll go on to, we'll go straight down to city administrative report. And Troy, you have a lot of things that we're going to discuss and you're going to introduce our guest tonight.
Sure. Thanks for skipping to me, Mayor. As I was going through the bonding process with Maggie, with Spear Financial, I had some questions about what we were permitted and allowed to do with funds that we received that we were holding before actual spend down. Seemed kind of silly to me that they just sat someplace and that we didn't at least earn some sort of interest on that. We had a conversation during which she asked, and she pointed out that University Heights, as a League of Cities member, had access to the Iowa Public Agency Investment Trust, or IPATE. And she said that she had a good relationship with Paul Cruz of IPATE, and that many of her clients and then other communities in Iowa City and in this area have worked with IPATE, and specifically with Paul. So she made that introduction. Paul and I spoke. It was very, very informative for me. It was a relatively short conversation, maybe 10 or 15 minutes. And I asked Paul if he'd be willing to come and just give that similar presentation to council so that we know this service that is available to us. And I think that we probably want to avail ourselves of it. And the mayor allowed me to invite Paul to present tonight. So I present Paul Cruz with IPATE.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Yes, I'm Paul Cruz with PTMA Financial Solutions. And I was telling Mayor Fromm, I said, I've been doing this since 1992. I was the first person to market the Iowa Public Agency Investment Trust. And so I've been around. I've been to a lot of city council meetings, boards of supervisors. We have a sister company called, or sister fund called ISJIT, the Iowa Schools Joint Investment Trust. So Iowa City Schools, well, every school district in the state has passed a resolution to utilize ISJIT. But what I want to talk to you about again is IPATE. And I'll pass that one that way and this one this way. But I'm going to give you just a little overview of the fund. It was started in actually in 1987. The schools fund was started in 86. IPATE was started in 1987. The Iowa League of Cities, the Iowa State Association of Counties, and the Iowa Association of Municipal Utilities got together, those three associations, and they said, what can we do to offer our membership an investment option? And that's exactly what it is. It's an option. Passing the resolution, and I've got the resolution with me. It's basically, as somebody makes the motion that you pass it, once it's passed, the City of University Heights is a participant in the fund. You don't ever have to invest, but once the resolution is passed, you're always set up. We manage the fund, we market the fund, we do the administration. U.S. Bank is the custodial fund. Right now, the fund is about $2 billion on behalf of cities, counties, utilities in the state. The daily fund is a money market fund. The rate today was 3.45. That's on every dollar that's in the fund. And I tell people, I said, if you're not getting 3.45, you should be, because that's the daily rate. It's liquid. There's no minimums. So as you can have as little or as much as you want. Like I mentioned earlier, City of Coralville, City of Iowa City, they're both clients of ours. They use both our fixed term and our daily fund. And again, the daily fund is liquid. And I'll just throw out, I know that you've got a number of banks in town. Let's just say Hills Bank and Trust, perhaps is your bank. So the way that would work is Your funds would be transferred back and forth through ACH, no cost. It's online. And of course, today, like everything, it's dual authentication. So it's, you know, you put in your user ID, your password, and then there's a dual authentication. But funds are transferred back and forth from your local bank to iPay. It's liquid. So as long as we know by 3 o'clock that, on the day and you want it back in the city the next day, it'll be there. So as long as 3 o'clock is the deadline, the next day is the settlement date. As I mentioned, today's 3:45. You can have as many accounts as you want. You know, again, if we're talking about bond proceeds, usually we'd have a capital account or a bonds proceeds account. But I said the city of Colfax has, I think, 16 different accounts, and they've got each account is maintained separately. Interest accrues daily, and then it automatically goes into the fund at the end of the month, so it automatically rolls into it. I mentioned Colfax. I think they've got a sewer account. They've got a police account. They've got a library account. They've got a parks and recreation. So again, each account is maintained separately. As Maggie indicated, again, with the, you're going to get, I think it's the 25th of February, you're going to get $1.5 million. Again, as you mentioned, what do we do with it? What we would provide is, and we would work probably with, if you have an architect, I don't know what the project is, or architect or a construction manager, we would match the draw schedule to the investments. We think, you know, again, whether it's a CD or a treasury. So what we would do is we'd get that draw schedule, and maybe you're going to need, say, $100,000 in April. So we'll set it up with a CD or a treasury that would mature in April. And then there'll be a blended rate. I just did one this morning for Muscatine Power and Water. I think the blended rate was about a 3.65. So again, you know, longer rates right now are a little lower than actually the daily rates. But that's kind of it. Again, it's passing the resolution. It would enable the city to invest. Doesn't require you to. One of the things that we do is we offer CD rates through the banks that we work with. So we work with about 300 banks across Iowa. And so if you want to, you have a CD that's maturing, you know, we'll go out and we'll get, you know, maybe it's the People's Bank in Council Bluffs. Maybe it's Bankers Trust in Des Moines. Hills Bank is one of our banks that we work with. But again, if that's your bank, we're not going to contact them. You guys are. That's kind of it. Like I said, it's an easy, it's a money market fund. We invest in everything that your city can invest in. So it's made up of U.S. Treasuries, agencies, and Iowa Bank CDs. When it was developed, and the investment policy, everybody had to have an investment policy. And I said back then when it was required, that would have been, I think, in 92, 93, we wrote the sample investment policy, which included IP. So most everybody that if they use the sample one has that in their investment policy. Questions? Again, I know I've thrown a lot at you, but again, passing the resolution would say that the city can invest if they want. Usually it takes about 2 or 3 days once we get it set up. Again, your local bank will be back linked to it, so the funds are going to be transferred back and forth. And again, as much or as little you want to invest.
When I talked with Paul, one of the things I expressed to him was that to the extent that we can do it and be fiscally prudent, we want to bank locally as much as we can. And, you know, Paul said he was actually encouraging of that. You can take our products, iPay's products, to the banks and say, here's what we are able to do. Here's what kind of vehicle. Here's what our commitment is as far as duration. And here's where our return will be. Can you match this? And Paul's like, iPay is fine with you doing that. Totally understood the local buy-in. So again, when I talked to Paul, I did not see a downside. I liked everything that I heard, but John, you and Steve are the financial experts, and all of you here at the tables have more experience in University Heights with these matters than I do. But I felt it important that Paul come in and at least let you know what I had heard and what was available.
The other thing is we will work with the local bank. Sometimes the local banks, I've been to meetings where, especially if it's a real large one, they'll say, we don't want all the dollars, or maybe they want the longer term. Maybe they like the 6, 9, 12 month pieces, and they want, you know, they say, you keep the liquid there, or vice versa. So again, we will work with the local banks as much as we can, but I get it. You know, keep it local if you can. And if you get the rate that we can offer, and maybe they'll offer a better rate, you know, if you don't know.
I wasn't hearing anything about there being fees. Are there fees on any service?
Yeah, good question. And, you know, everybody says, well, God, you guys got to make money. And we do. The fees, it's anything that we ever quote a rate is set, is net to the city. So the 345 is net to the city. If the CD rate is a 365, it's net. Again, bank, PTMA, there's an admin fee, there's a marketing fee, there's a investment advisory, and then a custodial. That adds up to roughly, and it's in our information statement, but it's about 30 basis points. But again, that's above, you know, so again, our the gross rate today is about a 375.
Which cities in Johnson County have you worked with recently? Or
yeah, well, like I said, City of Coralville, City of Iowa City, Tiffin,
North Liberty, Solon.
North Liberty just came on. Oh golly, and they've got considerable investments with us. Solon is a client, and like I said, every school. I shouldn't say that. There's five schools in the state that haven't passed the resolution. And I can, you know, they're all up in Northwest Iowa. Again, passing the resolution doesn't mean anything other than you can invest, but every school district in the area, is a participant. You know, North Scott, Davenport, like you said, I met with Davenport. They've got a big bond issue that we're going to
invest. Board of Supervisors. We got,
well, and I said, I've got Scott. I was supposed to meet with Scott today, and I got a message this morning. He couldn't meet.
Okay, thank you.
But so to be clear, we got a big chunk of money, like $1.5 million.
Yep.
We could send it your way.
Absolutely.
And then if we want to pull it out for shorter, longer term investments, have a better interest rate.
Yep.
There's no
yep.
fee to that.
Nope, okay. Absolutely not. And so let's just say that on the 25th, you put it into IPATE, and the 28th, the bank calls up and says, you know, hey, see, you guys got $1.5 million. You know, what's it going to take? And you pull it again. Now, one point though is what I would propose is we look at the draw schedule, and by looking at the draw schedule, we might buy a 90 day treasury or a 90 day CD and or a 120 day, you know. And so we think it's good to lock it in if you can. We don't see the rates going up this year.
Yeah.
You know, we said, had you had me here a year and a half ago, our daily rate was about 5.5. You know, and again, because of what we invest in, treasuries and agencies, when the Fed cuts, our rate cuts. But chances are the bank rates go down as well.
And as both Maggie and Dorsey reps, and then Paul reiterated and spoke with him, whatever we bond for needs to be kept separate from whatever we earn on that money. And that's when he also talked to me about Colfax. Colfax basically treats their different accounts like lines in the budget, which I also thought was very interesting to do, just keep it segregated.
So what we would do is I'd, you know, again, assume if you passed and we'd set up a, you know, maybe it's a bond, a 2026 bond account, and that's where those dollars would be maintained. So, and then again, if you have a general account or operating account, library.
Any other questions for Paul? So you're going to be continue to work with him.
Yes, unless there's some reason not to.
Our city treasurer is John Brown, right here.
So there used to be a John Brown that was at another, it was a treasurer somewhere else.
Probably Harper's Ferry, yeah.
Okay. Was that you?
No.
Okay. So what I'm going to do, and I always tell people, I say that I'm going to head back to I live north of Des Moines, so I'm going to head back now. But if you have any questions, I know you've got my number.
Yes.
And it's always one of those, once I leave and it's like, you know, God, I wish they would have called asking that. Call me up. I got it.
It's on your page too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And yeah, the other piece too, did that go around this one, the reasons to pass.
Yeah.
And that was, it's been, well, probably during COVID, it was the Benton County Solid Waste Commission I met with. And after I got finished and the chairman says, Paul, is there any reason why we wouldn't want to pass the resolution? And I said, I can't think of any, but I said, I can come up with a few ideas. So I did, that's what these are. So again, it's gives you an idea again, the benefits of how it can help the city.
And passing the resolution doesn't mean we have
to. Does nothing more than says you guys, it might be 5 years down the road, maybe another bond issue or, you know, we've seen where the banks don't want the money. You know, during COVID, there was banks that they didn't want public funds. And I said, North Lynn School District, I remember Carrie Payton called me and she goes, I need to move $3 million out by the end of February. And they had an ice sheet account and we set it up and moved it. So there's times when, you know, maybe property tax. You know, I know Story County puts everything in their IPAID account during property tax time, because they know what rate they're going to get and they don't have to worry about taxes, bank limits. So I'm going to, I'll leave this. This is the resolution. So again, if you pass it again, as you, to your point, you don't need to invest. And maybe it's just a library account. You know, it's one of those deals where, you know, there's accounts that at a bank that maybe they don't pay interest. 3:45 is not too bad today anyway. So. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Paul, for coming in person.
If you ever get
to, thank you very much.
If you ever head back up to the McDowell's, you know, or straight west.
Here's the thing.
We have family that grew up in the same farm area of Iowa.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Nice meeting you all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
No.
And then we'll go ahead and go back to Steve's first consideration of resolution number 2607, since this one is really
there's an application on each of them.
You bet. Thank you. So 2607 is the next resolution, next step in the process for the general obligation of borrowing. You know, the council has approved a preliminary official statement. Had a public hearing, authorized publication of bids and held an auction, and along the way, this is the next step. So what resolution 2607 is it authorizes the mayor and the clerk to sign a loan agreement for $1.5 million for the city to issue bonds. It identifies and appoints a bank called UMB Bank in West Des Moines as the registrar and paying agent for the bonds. It incorporates a whole bunch of language that is required for to comply with the IRS regulations concerning municipal bonds and tax-free status of those bonds. Authorizes the the
first consideration of ordinance number 258.
What's that? That's the tree board.
This is
no.
Location. Thank you. This resolution and the next resolution we discussed, or I brought to council for the last. This is the third month in a row. The Citizens Advisory Board. There were changes made at the state level that no longer allow citizens, at least citizens advisory boards,
for pretty much anybody but us. We fall outside of that because we are, we're too small to be captured in the group that they did, but we are out of step with what current state law is as far as citizens advisory boards. Our ordinance, our community policing relations ordinance, includes provision establishing and giving direction to a citizens advisory board. As I've discussed both in December and January's meeting, in order to bring our current ordinance in line with current state law and departmental practice toward that law, the changes that are proposed in this amendment or in this resolution would eliminate the functions, the establishment and functions of the Citizens Advisory Board. It would still leave intact the other substantive part of the resolution that specifically prohibited at a local ordinance level any sort of bias-based policing, and it would still require the police department to continue to check or continue to gather data points on police contact, on officer-initiated police contacts, so that if issues were identified in the future, that it was to our benefit or anybody's benefit to go back and look at those stats. They were available. Again, we want to try to maintain as much transparency as we can. I'm not interested in stopping to collect those numbers. I want to do it and be in compliance with what current state practice is. So that's that particular resolution, if anybody has any questions about it.
So ordinance 258 is before the council. Is there, this is first consideration. Is there a motion?
Motion
by Doug. Is there a second? Second by McKenzie. Discussion.
I would just say, I hesitate to get rid of this just because I think it's a thoughtful approach. At the same time, though, if we're not operating pursuant to it and we're not following what we'd set up, I know we haven't needed it yet, but it doesn't seem like we're ready to. That's a concern. Also, I defer to Kevin Sanders, not defer, but I take into account his feedback on it. And I guess in supporting this, I would just say that I'm also open if Kevin has other ideas, you know, that he sees we could take to help further, you know, our mutual goals. I think I would definitely be open to, you know, hearing that through your meetings, or maybe I'll, you know, have contact with them or something like that. So, those are my thoughts. Like I said, I thought this was a thoughtful approach. I get this is not kind of the way that people are thinking right now. And I hate to have a bunch of policies on the books that we're not following, if that makes sense.
And to your point, Kevin and I maintain contact. We did the duty to intervene conference. It's been several years ago now. He would like to do something like that again and continues to work closely with me and University Heights by extension. I also am reluctant to flush, if you will, any part of this, which is why I think it's important to continue gathering those stats so that if things change at the state level or the national level, and it is, again, you know, the pendulum swings both ways, and if that ever changes, we still have all the data sets to be able to go back. We're not stopping the collection. We're not getting rid of the data that we have. We're maintaining the collection. We're just not doing the Citizens Police Board portion of it, if that makes sense. But yes, I think it's important that our practices match our policies.
I don't think the state's asking us not to take data, are they?
They're not. So we're still in line. Many of the other communities that have citizen police boards, mm-hmm. that's their ordinance, and everything falls under that particular ordinance, and they have just stricken the ordinance. Some continue to collect data. I think Iowa City, for example, does. That's kind of the area of the state that we live in, and I think that it's important. Again, I want to be transparent. I want to be able to self-reflect and look in the mirror if there are issues that are identified, or just as a matter of making sure that we continue to do a good job. We have not had, since I came in 2019, we have not had a complaint of any sort of bias-based policing, which I think is commendable.
So if we did, what would be the exact procedure for it? You'd have an internal investigation.
Correct. If the person wanted to speak with the police chief, and sometimes in my experience in a former career, that wasn't always the case. They wanted to handle it outside of the police department, but they would speak with the police chief. And then even if they chose not to pursue a formal complaint, even if it, once the information is on the table, you can't just ignore it. So my expectation would be that the police chief would go ahead, regardless of what the person who was bringing this to light's final wishes were, that, hey, I just want you to be aware of this. If there was any sort of hint or allegation of bias-based police conduct, misconduct, I would expect that an internal affairs investigation be initiated, a review of all available reports, body cam and whatnot. And if Chief Akers is able to, based on that review of the material that's available to him, body cams or the one body cams or in-car cams, is able to say, boy, I can't clear this up, or not only can I clear it up, but I have concerns, then it would expand to where it would be necessary to bring people in to interview them or invite them in to be interviewed. But if looking at the body of material evidence there, the in-car camera, the video, the body cam, and you know any other surveillance, anything that was concrete and not subject to, I mean, a report is even biased by what your perspective is. But if Chris were able to look at that and say, you know, this just did not happen the way that it was related to me, this didn't happen in that fashion, then Chris at that point, the chief at that point, would be able to say, I don't need to look at this any further. I think personally, there's always room to have that conversation with the employee, with the officer, and say, even in that situation, I reviewed the body camera footage. It did not happen the way that it was reported, did not happen the way that it was perceived, but you should be aware of how it was perceived by whoever reported this, however the information came in. Kevin Sanders, again, for those of you who don't know, he's the Iowa City president. He's the president of the Iowa City chapter of the NAACP. Kevin would be brought in early on that, made sure that he was aware of the incident. Sometimes Kevin has much to add to it. Other times Kevin's just a good resource to have. He's non-biased. He can come in and he can look at it and he can say, Troy or Chris or Nick, I've looked at this and I don't have any concerns. Or he can also come and say, I've heard this through my organization, even though you guys haven't heard about it. So he's just that good neutral party. And Kevin would be brought in to any complaint we received, regardless of whether it came through Kevin, if that makes any sense. It's good to have that relationship. We always have strived to be as transparent as possible. We are not perfect. I'm not going to say that we are perfect as people or as an agency. But if you make a mistake, you should acknowledge it and you should do your best to make right whatever damage was done and do your best to make certain that it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I think the relationship with the local chapter of the NAACP is probably one of the most important parts, so that if there is a sense that there's becoming an issue, that they will communicate openly with you, you know, with the city about it before it becomes, an issue that is not dealt with and get rid of.
Kevin and I, while we don't have regularly scheduled meetings, we meet regularly. I think it was December was the last time that we met. So we're good about that communication. And if you have an interest in having conversations with him, I can see that you're extending an invitation next time.
Oh yeah, I've got his contact.
Okay.
Could we keep him on, say, like a mediator, kind of a volunteer or public mediator?
Kind of does that, I think, for everyone.
Kind of skirt the law. I mean, without
back. With Kevin?
Yeah.
He does that. He doesn't do it for the city. In my experience, the instances that he's involved in, he usually ends up seeing it more from the city's perspective than the other perspective, than whatever the complaints perspective is. But Kevin is not and does not want to be a mediator for that. He doesn't want to be anything for this. He wants to be a partner of the city, he wants to collaborate with the city, but he can't be, he plays a different role than that. But yes, we rely on him to come in and give an honest, I mean, he's that transparency window. He's the one that says, you guys screwed up, or I don't really see an issue here, or
he's a nice sounding board, but he can't be a mediator for the city. But he functions in that role, kind of what you're saying, but it's just not for the city. Yeah.
I think he'd be almost an advocate for the person who has the concern, but he can advocate in a way, I think, that is calm and clear and helps us to improve. You know, if there were an issue, I think it'd help us to improve rather than just be butting heads.
Right. And that's where it's important that even if there are things that need to be improved on, hypothetically on our side, it's important that we work with him as somebody to facilitate and help make sure that we're making the proper changes, not just. So yes, and we work very, very closely with him. We actually have parallel concerns, even though many people don't see it that way. They see a fence. We have parallel concerns, and Kevin has been a fantastic relationship or a resource for me, and we have a very good relationship.
So the state's asking us just to take it off the books, essentially?
The state is not requiring this at all. However, because we're not civil service, and because of the size of our community, again, we are really a small fish in the pond that they're not paying any attention to. But we're the only city in the state that I'm aware of that still has an ordinance that creates and enables a citizens police review board. And the only reason we do is because we're so small that when the state required everybody else to take them off, we didn't rise to the level that.
Okay, so we don't have to send anything.
Yeah, we have to do a resolution, and it takes three readings to pass it because we're amending a current ordinance. But that's what I would like us to be in line so that if there is an issue, it doesn't come down to nobody's pointing fingers and saying University Heights ordinance and practices aren't consistent with state law. They're antiquated or they haven't changed. And to Nick's point, I think our practice should exactly match our policy. I don't think you can say one thing and do another. And we're not there right now.
I don't think it'd be wise to oppose the state if it does happen pretty soon.
Yes.
Okay, so first consideration of ordinance number 258, amending ordinance number 235 is before the council. Is there a motion?
Yes, we have a motion and second.
Motion and second?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had that already.
Okay, second. Tim nodded his head, right? Was it you?
Motion was Swales and second. Was
sorry.
There was a while back.
Right.
Yeah. I just repeat it to help the clerk.
Thank you. Yep.
But anyway, okay. Any discussion? Roll call vote.
Herbold.
Aye.
Moore.
Aye.
Schroeder.
Aye.
Swales.
Aye.
Dwyer.
Aye.
Motion carries 5-0.
Okay. Thank you. Then, Troy, we have first consideration of ordinance number 259, amending ordinance number 52 to reduce the number of members of the tree board from 5 to 3.
Yes, this is also something, this is a housekeeping item. This is also something that I brought before council for this is the third month. This was actually initiated by a conversation with tree board members when I started attending the meetings back in December. The current tree board is by ordinance set at a membership of 5, with each member serving a 5-year term, and terms are staggered. In discussing that, there was 2 vacancies, Lisa Haverkamp, who had served her 5-year commitment and was stepping away as the chair, that created one opening. And then David Conrad had to step away because he had too many other things going on in his life and couldn't continue that commitment. And in talking with the tree board, they expressed that was an issue, the 5-year term coming on the tree board. The tree board by ordinance only really has to meet once a year if they wanted to, and that is to do some review and update of information required by ordinance. But the tree board wants to, as probably most boards do, the tree board members want to feel like if they're giving their time to something that it's important and it's worthwhile, and they want to take
as active role as they can. And because of that, and because they were trying to flesh out things for a while that they were meeting every month, it was suggested that the tree board membership be reduced for ease of operation as much as anything, and that even more importantly, the term be reduced to 3 years. The mayor and I have talked about this, when the mayor points out that when she asks people before appointing them to the tree board, she, or to any board, she lets them know that even though it's a 5-year commitment, they can resign at any time if it ends up being too much of a time commitment. And while that is true, it does create issues then when in the middle of a term, somebody steps away and you're supposed to have 5 members to do business, and now you only have 3 members. The board members felt that a 3-year commitment was easier to grasp and easier to commit to. As you all are aware, if a board member at any board wishes to remain on the board after their terms expired, they can ask the mayor for consideration for reappointment. So we're reducing the commitment, but we're not reducing their ability to continue to serve if they'd like to. We also talked about, as far as the reduction of members, that does not prove the tree board, like any other board, is an open meetings board. Meetings are published. Just because there's only now, if you pass this, a 3 board membership doesn't, or 3 member board, doesn't mean that you still couldn't have 5 people or 6 people. Whoever was interested at that particular time in their life or that particular time of the season could still come in and participate, be present, and to the extent the tree board allowed them to participate. So this is really in response to a conversation I had initially with tree board membership, current tree board membership, and then the mayor. And it's more of a housekeeping issue, and it would change the resolution to reduce the membership to 3 persons instead of 5, and then to reduce the term of appointment from 5 years to 3 years, so that again you maintain that 1-year stagger with the members.
Yeah, this has been discussed a couple of months.
Yes.
And the council's looked at this a few months. This is first consideration of ordinance number 258, amending ordinance number 52. Is there a motion?
Motion.
Yes, McKenzie. Second by Tim.
So wait, are we looking at this? So it's 258, you said?
259. Should be, that's a typo in the agenda.
I said 8, didn't I? It's 259. The other one was 258. Thank you. This is 259, amending ordinance number 52 to reduce the number of members of the tree board from 5 to 3 and 3-year terms, staggered 3-year terms. Okay, and we have a motion by McKenzie and a second by Tim. Mm-hmm. Any further discussion?
Well, so maybe I'm not looking at the right version. Does it reduce to 3-year terms?
So the one that was circulated did not. I talked with Troy and Mike about that on a fly here this evening, and sent Mike a version that does do that.
Okay, I must have seen.
And but all it does is the next section says the term is 5 years and it crosses that out and then says 3. And then there's several sentences that talk about the initial board, provided, however, that for the initial board there'll be 1 member that has 5, 1 member that has 4.
That makes sense.
So you can stagger them. We just got rid of that because we already have the board.
I trust you to the drafting.
Yeah, no,
for not being in here, I was scared.
Understood. Yeah.
I support this. I think that not only, you know, does the 5-year term seem really long, but I think that could discourage people from even talking to you potentially, Mayor, if they're like, "Whoa, I don't want to sign up for 5 years," even if they knew they could drop off early. So I definitely.
It's always been a challenge, Nick. Yeah.
No, I support making this more manageable for people. Because I think people want to fulfill terms, right? People don't usually want to sign up for something if they think, "Oh, I'll just quit," you know, partway through. So
yeah, you said the same thing.
I appreciate your work on this, Troy. I support this.
Okay, any more discussion? Okay, roll call vote.
Moore.
Aye.
Schroeder.
Aye.
Swales.
Aye.
Dwyer.
Aye.
Herbold.
Aye.
Carried 5-0.
Thank you. Troy, do you want to continue with your...
Sure. Couple items I just want to make sure council's aware of. I did circulate a report yesterday. It was early for me. Winter weather items. Probably all of you are aware of it. I wanted to make sure you knew that on February 2nd, Stella started taking water on in their basement in a trickle. And originally they thought it was something internal. It became clear that night and the next morning, Tuesday morning, that it was more than just a trickle and something internal. It took a while for Iowa City Water, or they responded right away. They were on top of it, but it took a while to determine where the water was coming from. They had to bring in a specialized person and equipment from, I think it was Kansas City. And they eventually located the break on Melrose and the 1200 block of Melrose. It did create an outage for some people, but the repair has been made. There's a pile of gravel on the road there now, but I just wanted to make sure council was aware of that. OUP South and North HOA, this is relevant for you to know as both the city and because it will affect the city in a special assessment. The siding has been an issue. Primarily, this is about the siding has been an issue. The pressurized ash siding and the stain, both HOA North, OUP North and OUP South HOA have decided that rather to continue to apply stain and make repairs to rotting boards, they are going to replace all of the exterior siding with a type of a concrete board that will result in an expense to all of the owners, including the city, that will be paid for as a special assessment. For OUP South, that isn't quite known yet. It's roughly known, but there's a question about what the city wants to do with this fence out here around the playground. I was reluctant to commit one way or another without individual discussions that I'll have with some of the counselors and membership. I know we've talked about doing something else with that space. From a former police officer in chief, I always felt that space was closed in and was not easily viewable from the outside. I would prefer that we could see in better. When I spoke with Councilor Moore, she told me that she had conversations with family member with parents who liked that it wasn't closed. So anyway, I need to work out some stuff there, but there will be a special assessment. Dues will go up for everybody, both buildings, and it varies a little bit, but roughly 6%. I will get the numbers to John and to Steve on the expected numbers on the special assessment so the city can build that into the budget. The commercial owners in particular, so OUP South commercial owners, have been for a while now. And again, at the last meeting, expressed some concern that, one, dues have, not just for them, but for the whole building, but dues have continued to increase. And there seems to be maintenance items with siding. It's been pointed out that the concrete is not holding up as well as it might have. And those commercial owners have expressed concern that, you know, while they like being here, it may not, from a profitability standpoint, it might not be sustainable. Jake Neals is actively trying to sell his space, for example, and says that he will be happy to finally be out of here. So I just report that back. I think this is a fantastic facility for the city. I live in an HOA, and HOAs to some extent deal with these issues, but I wanted council to be aware of those issues. Swisher Track Trails, again, you approved the contract last time. That will be, we got the amended contract. They agreed. They had no issue with any of the suggestions that our city attorney made, and city clerk has that for the mayor to sign tonight. I also spoke with Jeff Fruin of the city manager of Iowa City. The 24 acres that Board of Regents allows the city, is going to allow the city to develop as part of this, actually sits in Iowa City and not University Heights. And I wanted to make sure Iowa City didn't have any concerns about, I don't know, us developing property, if you will, outside of the city limits. Any liability issues that might go with it.
I know we've talked about various fundraising to possibly include naming of the trail system or even individual trails. And Jeff and I had conversation over 2 days, and we said after discussion with their city legal, they have absolutely zero issue with us developing it. It's not owned. It's not property that's owned by University Heights, nor is it owned by the city of Iowa City. It's owned by Border Regents. And anyway, I just wanted to make sure everybody was aware of that, because that's come up before. Tree board, we are moving forward. They are moving forward with a spring event. I've told you that before, the spring hike in University Heights Swisher Track with District Forester Mark Bitosh. The date on that has changed. If you've already put it on your calendar, it is now May 30th at 10 a.m. Again, it's being organized by the tree board as part of the criteria for designation from the Arbor Day Foundation as Tree City USA for University Heights. LRS, our refuse and recycling. There are a couple issues with unpicked up items. It happened that Councilor Schroeder was one of those. LRS was super responsive once I was able to make contact with them. One of the issues that as we've run into is that their call taking center is not in Iowa, and sometimes they have a hard time locating where we are and who's responsible for it. Tim informed me tonight that in his conversation with one of the LRS representatives, they're opening they're changing their call center and
More localized call centers, so they'll actually know that we're part of their system.
Yeah, to try to be more responsive directly to both community members. And I think that's all I had that I wanted to touch on.
Do you remember, I wasn't at that OEP South meeting last week. Do you remember what the city's increase or city's portion of the siding was?
I do not. That siding, and it really wasn't until after the meeting when I looked at it, that's a chunk of siding out there for this building. So it did increase the cost significantly. I don't remember what our breakdown, commercial spaces will pay by the same formula that we break down everything else. So it's square footage that it will be divided up among square footage from all the commercial spaces. It won't be that's the city's fence to take care of. That's part of the siding. So in my conversations with the other board members, specifically with Kevin, if the city chooses not to do the siding out there, that reduces everybody's costs, because however many square foot of siding that is doesn't need to be done, and that cost doesn't go into what needs to be divided up. The problem with that is then what happens with it? If we remove the fence on one extreme, if we remove the fence, then the city, I don't believe, should be on the hook for removing the fence if that's being done as part of the siding project. Or do we potentially say, look, you're taking off lots and lots and lots of siding from the building here. There has to be a pile of good wood somewhere in there. Can the HOA store that and make repairs to the fence out here ongoing? Or does the fence even need, from a stylistic point of view, from aesthetic point of view, does it even need to match the siding? Or can it accent the siding or blend in, much like the OUP signs that are out front? So it could be a different material. It could be potentially, I don't know, like a cable barrier that disappears, yet at the same time it's there so that both passing officers can monitor what's going on, yet children that are being allowed to play in there can't just disappear, down Grand somewhere. So I don't know what the exact dollar was.
Yeah, there was $167,000, right?
And I could go
back. I don't know if that included the fence or not, but
what I believe what we talked about there had the city's fence stripped off of that. And that was one of the conversations that I needed
to get down on.
Correct. Exactly. I think that was the low number if we didn't do the fence, if I'm recalling correctly.
Yeah. What's the timeline for working
with it? It would be this coming year. And if there is interest, I don't need to take up council time, but if there is interest, I can tell you it's a concrete board product. I'm probably oversimplifying that is used locally at some of the convenience stores locally. That's the one that I remember was easy for me to go look at. I can also get a sample of it. It would be stained to roughly match the same color that's here now. So it wouldn't change the exterior appearance. It would be this concrete board that wouldn't rot away like the pressurized ash that's underneath there. it would still need to be, as I understand it, it would still need to be stained, and much like a house, probably stained or painted or whatever the right words are, again, sometime in the future. But right now, I mean, we've been doing the siding to some degree about every other year on the exterior of the building here. It has, and Nick's well aware of this, but I mean, not only is it the stain that's not holding up, it is the materials underneath it. The concrete board has a 15-year, I believe, material warranty. That's not the actual stain, where, I mean, that all sounds good, and this is a proven product. The existing product, I mean, it isn't just the stain, it's the board underneath it that is. So, I mean, Nick and I have had conversations that is this a defect that it goes back to design, engineering, or selection, or what is it? Bottom line is, at this point, it needs to be repaired, whatever it is, but that is something that we're at least discussing.
So aesthetically, it'll look the same?
Yes, aesthetically, it'll look the same. It will still have a wood grain. It's a little bit thicker, but you won't notice that, obviously, because it goes on, but it still has a wood grain, and if you were to hold it up right now, the colors wouldn't match exactly, but once all of it's stripped off and put on there, it'll look the same.
And then, as far as this space over here, do kids actually play in this park? They do. I don't let mine, because I think everyone just lets their dogs pee over there. So I've called it the pee park, and we don't know about it anymore.
Yeah. And that is, some people view it as that. when we have events like the National Night Out or things like that, when we had the open house, there were lots of people playing. And that's when I learned that, as a result of those, I learned that parents like that, because it's one entrance. Mm-hmm. Kids can't get out anywhere else, so they can let them go in there and play around. But it is hard to tell where the kids playing. You can't see in it unless you're right up here. You can't see it, but you do see dogs walking in out. Yeah. So that was the other thing, is that, again, when we talked about it, it makes zero sense for OUP South, specifically commercial properties, and specifically the city of University Heights, to pay for this new siding to include the fence if there is a desire to change it sometime in the relatively near future. And by that, I mean even the next 3, 4, 5 years. It does not make sense to make that investment when we have wood to make potential repairs, or there are other options that the HOA might be able to do at a much cheaper cost point that are actually more desirable than an enclosed corral.
It'd be nice if the Rushton people could work on, you know how the water drips down, anybody sees the ice that kind of forms from those slow drips. While they're here, because I think it's Rushton, the same people who did the sheet metal, I think, are doing the siding, if I understood correctly.
That was where the bid was from, correct?
Yeah. And so maybe they could fix the ice issue that we have, you know, at the same time. I don't know. That's something.
It would seem like, as long as they peel down behind it, that they should be able to. I'll bring that up. Any other questions about my report? Thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Troy. We'll go on to city clerk report. Mike, you circulated your report. Did you want to add some things?
Only thing to add, we're going to have resolution 2608, which is the bank depository resolution, just to let you know. I did a deposit on Saturday and used my very last Iowa State Bank deposit slip. So I'll be able to now move to my drawer full of Midwest One deposit slips right before they change their name to the bank. So it struck me, as with all this happening, that, yeah, we're still there. I do have a drawer full of Midwest One deposit slips. So, yeah.
Okay. Any questions for Mike? We'll go on to John Brown. John, you circulated your reports today, I saw.
I did. Thank you, Mayor. I have two items to append to the list of warrants. One is a City of Iowa City fuel bill for $911, and the other one is CenturyLink phone bill for $137.
Oh, he's got it. The bills, the warrants in front here.
No, that's
the. Oh, he's got the report of the total revenue.
Yeah.
February.
Right.
Yeah.
But there are two additional bills to the warrants.
Property taxes.
Yeah.
And then the warrants have been circulated.
Yes.
And I thought you were going to put that.
No, but John was saying we have two extra ones, but yes, I'll throw the warrants up too.
Okay. Here we are. Yeah, they're before the council. Are there any additions to that, John?
Yes, there's an Iowa City fuel bill for vehicles for $911.02. And a CenturyLink bill for $137.22.
Okay, everyone got that? Are there, is there any objection to paying the warrants? Hearing none, the warrants will be paid by unanimous consent. Okay, so we'll go on to John and Nick. We're going to discuss the proposed tax levy. Are you going to do that? Oh, we got to do all. Are we going to do 2608?
Let's do that first.
Okay, 2608 is kind of a cleanup from John
Olson and the city exam.
Olson.
Yes.
And he said this hasn't been done for several years. Consideration is approving financial institutions as official depositories and specifying limits on the maximum amount that may be deposited at each institution. And we have an institution that's changing its name. And so he suggested this be done.
Mm-hmm.
And so that 2608 is before the council.
So moved.
Okay, second?
Second.
Second by Lisa. Okay. Is there discussion?
Okay.
Yeah, John does.
Sorry. I just want to point out that with a cap of 500K, we are currently exceeded that have for some time with one financial institution. There's something we might want to revisit. The institution is changing its name, and they've also, if we can always say, less user-friendly as far as ACHs and what have you. I had a meeting with Hill Bank, and they're putting together material to offer us and wanting to pay via ACH at 5 cents of ACH and waiving the fees, the monthly fees. So something for us to think about, maybe to consider relocating or splitting our operating account. Yeah, at least in half. I mean, because if we split our current operating account in half, we would still be in violation of this proposal that it's.
Did you find out when we did this last? I mean, did you just happen to see it? Because
I see this resolution for the first time. I'm sitting here kind of gobsmacked. I'm like, we could cut our operating account in thirds and still be violating this. So that, as I was saying, we've got quite a bit of money at Midwest One. So,
Mayor, you and I have talked about West Bank. I don't know what we have there, but
no, it has a big list here. So
we see that.
Any additional questions before we?
Steve, are you going to give some back?
Well, I was going to say, I don't pay attention to so much the balance as I appreciate the comment. I mean, your council would, I mean, you may amend before you vote on this, you can amend those amounts to make $1 million instead of $500,000 in each institution. All it does is it says this is the amount that we're authorized to deposit.
Mike, would you do me a favor? Pull up my treasurer's report.
Yep. Yep.
I guess
I think this is a great resolution. I just want to be forthcoming and say,
sure.
We're going to pass it and scroll down to the bottom.
Yep.
We've got 1.6 million in West One. So, like I said, we cut that in thirds. So we're still in violation of this.
stuff.
I'm all for moving things around. I like Paul Cruz's thing today, but
I guess that seems like it's maybe a connected issue. I would, if I were going to raise levels too, I tend to maybe look at the user-friendly local banks first also. But I guess I would propose that we amend, I don't know if maybe all of them to $1 million. I don't know if that makes sense. Why don't I just make that motion to move to...
Yeah, except I think we already have over a million five in one of them.
I mean, if you could move that, though.
We could, you can make a $2 million amount. Doesn't mean you have to go put that much in.
Doesn't mean you have to put any.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess, is there any, I understand like FDIC insurance and with separate accounts, but do you have any other, is there any other reason not to put too many eggs in one basket, I guess?
There definitely is. And from sitting on some of the boards with nonprofits, I mean, they have this in some of their bylaws. It's just not having all your eggs in one basket, especially getting different financial times. You know, if somebody makes a run out of the bank, we still have liquidity at other banks. And I think we need to look at it from two standpoints. And this is something that there's just one analysis I've been wanting to do is, what is the average balance of cash we actually need on it? Because this has always been bugging me. We still have all this money in the operating account, and it's not sitting. It's not earning, you know, bang for our bucket, you know, different institutions. So I think that we need to establish the cash flow. What does the city need for cash flow regularly throughout the year? And, you know, and timing that, you know, let's say with the spring and the fall when we have the influx of cash coming from the property and stuff. So we need to establish this base. It's like, yeah, we should always have our, maintain our operating fund, you know, between this amount and this amount, you know, give or take, which would add and flow of, you know, some money's coming in and our various expenses. And then we have this other money that we say we're going to invest for future use. We stagger that in different banks, and then we also stagger it in different accounts, not because it's in different accounts, but for the timing is different because you want to hedge, you know, it's like you always want to do something like a mixture of like a 6 or 9 month CD and then maybe like a 12, 16 month CD. So you're hedging. You're not, because you're never sure where the rate's going. It's a good smart play. So I think that's analysis that I need to do is say, you know, this is the operating level between minimum and maximum we should always attain. This is the amount of money that we could probably just like comfortably invest in various financial institutions that are listed in this resolution. And also IPAE, possibly, which is not listed in this resolution. So I think it would be a good time. And I think as a council, if they want to, let's say, come up with a mill, and I need to shed some funds, I think it would be great to maybe do, I could get with Jordan Barrett and his manager at Hills Bank, the consultation with, you know, you, Mayor, and Troy. We can go ahead and move some money over there to establish an operating account. We start taking advantage of the ACHs. We don't have to sign checks anymore. 5 cents an ACH, that's far cheaper than a check that often gets lost in the mail. I mean, Mike will tell you that we sometimes, hey, you didn't pay your bill, or, you know, I mean, Chris said another thing today, the check just got usurped. So it strengthens our payment system. So I think this is a great opportunity, and I thank everybody for the time. And
I guess from a staff perspective, I think recommendation would be that, again, I think our practices should match our policies. And as either Steve or Mike pointed out,
if you say that it's 2 million, doesn't mean you have to put 2 million in there, but at least you're in compliance if you put them all at 2 million or 1.7 million. But if we have a policy, we should be following it. And even if you say, again, it's 2 million, not to exceed 2 million, John, as city treasurer, can still do all of those things to see where best put the money. But we're in compliance while we're doing it, as opposed to being out of compliance. So, I guess from a staff recommendation, I would say we should adjust our resolution to bring us in so that we are compliant with it.
Maybe, I think it's a good point. Maybe one thought would be to defer consideration of this resolution this evening, so that those kinds of changes can be made, and this the Iowa the IPAT could be added if that makes sense. It's not in any jeopardy whether this is that tonight or not.
Right.
So,
and we got another 1.5 coming. So there's
Sorry.
Yeah. I guess I think that all makes sense. I do think there's maybe some wisdom to not putting all our eggs in one basket, but I also think there's some wisdom to not having it so spread out that it's additional work for staff. So I would be in favor of deferring and hearing what you think about, and maybe moving some to Hills in the meantime. Do we have anything that's limiting us from going to Hills right now?
No.
They're on our
No. I think Hills is a solid institution, and I got something in my pocket that I'm gonna whack them in the back of the head with. It's an industry thing. It's like you set up a CD, and then it seems like their letter. I didn't see a better top job. When the CDs expire, you get the letter, your CD is about to renew, and now that it renews, automatically renews at something like 0.3%. That kind of thing just infuriates me that we couldn't get, and I got an apology out of Jordan, because that happened, and that's why we hadn't moved some money to another institution with better rates, because it just automatically renewed at 0.3%. So I would like some better assurances, like, hey, don't take advantage of this. But
well, if bad stuff happens, that's why I pay Ron. It's
that's true.
That's ridiculous.
West Bank is on the list, and they have actively been trying to get a more robust financial working relationship with us. I don't believe we have any money currently with them, even though they are on the list. I think they would be very competitive if you reached out.
Well, they can be. Everything is about, I'm able to tell, everything is about timing.
Right.
And it's also about how much and for how long.
Right.
And it just happened when we went through this exercise, I think it was like spring of last year, that, they put it a bid. I mean, West Bank did, Hills Bank did, Midwest One did, Collins, and it just happened to be the Green State had, they were running a special, and we were able. But it's not always the case at Green State. Mike and I, we went down there together.
What do we need, Steve, if we were going to defer this, since there's already a motion?
You just moved to defer.
I just moved to defer.
A second.
Okay.
So,
there's a lot of things. Wants to defer till next month.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
That's good, too, because we haven't looked at this in a while. And a long while.
Mayor.
Tim.
Hey,
so, Mayor.
And I'm sorry, my
I was just going to ask about the, there's a lot of things on the table, like analyzing cash flow, figuring out what that is, and then there'd be a strategy of figuring out what can be in each these different accounts. There's going to ACH, there's IPAT. So how do we get a strategy around all of that and present that so we can move forward with this?
Yeah, and I guess, I wonder, like, if IPAT is a good play, I like to support the local banks. And so that's where I'm kind of torn, because it seems like it would be if we feel comfortable that our money is, I mean, it seems like the $2 billion sort of fund, we're hopefully pretty secure to put our money there. But iPay seems to be an easy place to have that be the default and then pull it out to try to capture good CD rates. So, but I don't know, you know, obviously we heard their pitch. I don't know what the downsides might be. But I'd be curious to know if there's more to the story. It seems like a lot of people use them.
Staff can work on this and present something.
Do you need a work session or anything to hammer this out?
I think there's enough direction from council right now for us to put together something. And then if you want to hammer out details after that, but I think there are benefits to being diverse so that you can go to different places and already have that relationship. I think what iPay said tonight made a lot of sense to me, and that's why I invited them in to talk. They will have the resolution, they left it here, hard copy, but they are also sending the city attorney it. I think this is all stuff that can be rolled into one, and John and I, Mike, Steve, whomever can put together, here's what we think is a prudent approach, and here's what we would like to do, and what do you all have suggestions otherwise, or what do you think about this? We'll work on that for next month, if that's okay.
Great.
Sounds good.
For you, John. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
Okay, we'll go on to the next thing is the discussion of the proposed tax levy rate. And that came from John Brown. And Nick, did you want John to discuss that?
You want to go first. I'll see if there anything to add.
Sure. I mean, something new for this fiscal year, upcoming fiscal year, is we have the new bond issue. We're going to have about, say, $201,000 in principal to pay on the new bond this year. So Steve Poole and I figured it would best way to attack that new principal payment would be to use lost funds, you know, instead of having, because we currently don't have a separate debt service levy. So to avoid, you know, reigniting that, we could use availability of the lost funds. I mean, it's already mandated that half of the lost funds have to go towards property relief, tax relief. And we're doing that. So by taking what we can, and there's a little bit of rollover from previous fiscal years to take care of that bond payment, that does alleviate a debt service levy, but there also is lost funds that we don't have. We're covering other things that we've done in the past years. The current rate is about 60 cents more than what the rate it was last year, but it's still under what it was 3 years ago, you know, 2 or 3 years ago before we had lost. So it, you know, compared to 3 years ago, compared to property tax rates are not going up if you look at it in that perspective. But they are going up from fiscal year to fiscal year. But that was Steve Poole's life strategy, was to push the lost over to cover the debt service and not have a debt service levy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is where the council has potential decisions, right? Because we learned last year that the state government has kind of ratcheted down our ability to levy. And so we last year felt like our hands were a little bit tied in terms of what we could levy. But now we are, as John pointed out, we are borrowing money at the same time that we are getting lost funds that are supposed to in part go to lowering taxes. And so, John, tell me if I'm saying something incorrect, but basically what's happening instead of, I mean, how the lost money is lowering taxes right now is by preventing there from being a debt levy. Where there otherwise would have been.
Correct.
So, I mean, the point is we are not raising taxes as we would if we were levying for the debt, which is something we can do. That's, we're not restrained from levying more to pay the debt that we're taking out. You know, but that's going to take cash that we'd otherwise have on hand, otherwise have to do things in the community. So these are kind of fundamental taxing sorts of decisions for city council to make. The current default makes sense to say, well, why don't we just use this income where we have coming in to not have a debt levy? But I just want to make sure that is crystal clear to council that this is the decision that would be we'd be making. We're still, as John said, we still have cash on hand. We still have the bond money coming in. So I don't think it really ties our hands in terms of how we turn around and use the bond money or the cash on hand that we have, which is significant, as we've talked about. So I don't think, unless the city council wanted to add a debt levy, which we could do, this seems to be the obvious choice. And then when it comes to the rest of the levying, that's where our hands are kind of tied anyway, well, from the state law, right?
Well, that's great. I mean, the levies also need to coincide with the budget. You know, we can add a debt levy and like, oh, okay, that's another 200 grand. Well, okay, where is that going to be in the budget? You know, this is us being good fiscal stewards. We have our budget where we expect, and we don't necessarily need all this extra loss for fluff for the city, and we're just going to apply it to the debt service levy, so we have to pass it.
But I think that also is applicable if we do decide we want to do something in town. The council to feel like our hands are tied to not do anything because we're using this money to pay what otherwise would have been levied through the debt levy. I guess that's my thought on it, is that we're not tying our hands. We're just not bringing in more tax revenue right now where we could.
Correct.
And we're about 66 cents, did you say, a little more
around than last 60 year? Cents over last year, but it's still under than what it was three years ago.
And
it's 11.11.1.
Yeah.
But if I go to...
And the year before, we were even higher. So we're lower than 3 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, yes, Mayor, I'm pulling that up.
From what I can tell.
Brought that with.
I think we're pretty good.
3 years ago, we were 11.8, if I remember correctly, off the top of my head. So we're still...
The question I had, in case anybody else has this question, I didn't know if it was disingenuous to say we're using 50% for property tax relief when we are paying a levy. You know, we're just avoiding a levy that we weren't paying before. You know what I'm saying? So that I didn't seem like, from the response, that was a problem, that was disingenuous.
The certified property tax for fiscal year 25 was 11.83. 26, so we're much lower than 24, 25 was 11.83, 11.59 the year after that, so we're sitting pretty good.
Yeah, it's good. And this is kind of our worksheet. We'll see how it keeps shaking out here. I know you and probably Steve Cool worked on this a long time, and maybe even Nick worked on this formula. Thank you for doing that. And do you have anything else you want to add under finance? Okay, very good. Thank you. We'll go on to community protection, and Chief, you circulated your report yesterday.
Yes.
And we have a full-time sergeant.
We do. Adam joined us as of the 2nd, and he's doing well. He's bright. And so he started to pick up the systems that we use, and he's doing well for himself. So, you know, the one thing that I want to bring up that didn't make the report, and I didn't think about it until after I sent the report out, reviewing total calls for service, I included 2025 in my report and a breakdown of the calls per service, the number of times we responded to those types of calls. I looked back, and for the 2024 statistics, for the year-end statistics, our total calls for service in 2024 were 3,681. So we're almost double what we were 2024, which would bring concern, except for the most significant ones the most prominent calls for service that we have are going to be extra patrol requests, assisting other agencies, house checks, community involvement, school checks, running radar down by the schools, and the school crossing guards. So all things that are generally positive for the community. So the gentlemen that we employ are very active. They do a good job with what we want them to do, and they interact well with the community. If you would like me to send out the 2024 statistics, I can certainly do that. I have them on a spreadsheet. And if you wish, I'll send them out either later tonight or tomorrow. So, any questions?
Nice. Mackenzie, did you want to add some things?
I don't have anything.
Okay. We're working together well. That's good.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much.
Of course.
I know it seems a little further out with the patrolling, that the school patrol, but seems like it's pushed to April a little more.
It'll all work out.
I know, it's not the break, but that's
the other thing. You know, and I have considered this, and, you know, but even if it were spring break, you still take 2 or 3 weeks to make yourself, give myself the confidence that the little people can process and activate the crossing lights and do it properly and safely. If it's a couple more weeks later or a month later, or even if we have to revisit it again next year, which I would imagine we will.
Yeah,
That's okay. That's okay.
Good.
I will be dreadfully honest and tell you that I have a lot of fun at that corner interacting with all of those little people and sometimes the parents. So the little people are 10 to 15 that I speak to on a daily basis. And their parents will roll down the windows and allow me to approach the vehicle and then talk to them. And that's very important to us and to our community. So.
Thanks, Chief.
You have no questions?
Thanks so much. And we'll go down to Ryan and Doug. Ryan, do you want to start?
I can. Yeah. Thank you, Mayor. We've been doing, I won't go into a lot of detail. We've been doing a lot of things in the background for Melrose Complete Street Project. There's a report from Blake Peterson included in my report, meeting with Paul Moore a couple more times, trying to follow up with some city decisions, items there, the right-of-way work that Tim Greenwood from Steve's office is working on, getting those easements and acquisitions, you know, offers and appraisals sent out, and discussions with those property owners is ongoing. Utility coordination, all those items, we're working through those items this last month, and we'll continue in February and March. So the MS4 storm sewer permit is just something for our new council members that we do every year. We submit a report to the DNR, which just has some summary of storm sewer work and inspection work and reports that the DNR requires of us as a city. The RRFPs, as the mayor mentioned, I don't know who's pushing the date out for this, but it wasn't me. And as far as I know, we're still on schedule. The contractor wasn't able to give me an update on delivery date, but the materials were ordered within the end of the week when we approved the agreement last month. So the materials have been ordered. They're kind of long lead time for poles and the actual equipment for the push buttons, but I'll probably have an update in the March meeting for the timeline for everybody on that. There was, I'll bring your attention, there was an invoice from City of Iowa City for the right-of-way permit. Just to reiterate, the east half of the intersection is in the City of Iowa City's limits. So we were asked to obtain a right-of-way permit from the City of Iowa City in order to install that RRFB sign post. So
is it a new pole on Kozer that's not being used?
Well, we might use that someday, I guess. We'll see. Yeah, it'll probably look exactly like that one, too. It's here. So I'm going to leave that one in case the city ever wants to do something else with it on the Kozer one. Melrose Avenue panel replacements is a project that was in the budget last year for the current fiscal year. This project's been kind of a difficult traffic control setup. So I've sent some sheets to the mayor and city administrator to review that. It's going to involve a detour on Melrose Avenue. This would be between Sunset and sort of the curve, or essentially Kozer area. It would be patching the pavement that's not going to be replaced with the Melrose Complete Streets project, so that the pavement's in good condition when we strike bike lanes. That's kind of the main focus of that project. City of Iowa City's wastewater last summer, in coordination with Highland Drive project, they mentioned that there's some sanitary work they may want to do, and actually reconfiguring some of the way that their lines lay out on Melrose around the George Street intersection. So we're likely looking at a bigger impact there at that intersection with the dead end cul-de-sac than we would have initially expected. So I'm waiting for some feedback from Iowa City to confirm the scope that they'd like to proceed with. The sidewalk inspection program will issue the quotation documents. Most of that's pretty well ready to go. And that work is planned. I'm going to set the contract up that the work cannot begin until June 8th, which is at least the original Iowa City end of school year, the first Monday after school is done. And the work could be completed before school starts in August. So 28D agreement, Troy and I met with City of Iowa City Public Works and Streets Department personnel last month to review some proposals that we sent back to them on a 28D agreement items. This is something that City of Iowa City wanted to hash out again, or kind of formalize an agreement for all streets and signs and traffic signals, and detailing out who's going to maintain or be responsible for what when it comes to a cost standpoint and repairs, particularly where our boundaries are not a clean line straight across the street, just like at Sunset and Hillcrest, and the right of way is down the middle of the street. So the city council approved a resolution to sort of share responsibilities for snow removal. I believe that was 2019. And so that's been working well for City of Iowa City. And so they're just kind of trying to expand on that agreement and sort of also just refresh the snow removal agreement. No changes planned for snow removal though. So
does Iowa City have any, have they been planning any signs for the motorized scooters and electric bikes? Or is like that on their radar at all? I know there was an article in the Press Citizen. I feel like I'm going to hit one of them every single time I'm at the stoplight there. Is there any talk about them putting in signage closer to the hospital with it? And would we do anything?
I haven't talked to them about that. I'm not aware of City of Iowa City doing that, but I have not reached out to them and asked that question. I know Nick has mentioned this concern to me, particularly for the people that live on Melrose on our Overwood sidewalk stretch. It sounds like they have issues. I think particularly since this university's put this new parking lot at the old athletic building.
For sure.
With people parking, employees parking and using those electric scooters. When Nick mentioned it, I was wanting to get with Steve and Troy and police chief to discuss what are other communities doing about this. And so
I would just be curious, because like the Press Citizen article had that obviously there's way more ER visits and hospitalizations because people are getting hit on them. And a lot of it's kids, but it's not kids in the morning. And I just didn't know if maybe in talks with the city there, with Iowa City, they're looking at.
I sit on the Safe Streets and Roads for All committee, and we've been dealing with an action plan, we're dealing with something else, but no, it's not the disaster. I'll bring it up at the next meeting.
Steve, do you know like what our options are as a community? I mean, number one, and maybe it's an enforcement issue a little bit, like you see them come down the roads, especially when it gets dark later, some don't have lights and they're shooting down the sidewalk. The speed, you'd think, you know, I don't know if we can do some sort of reasonableness standard on speed, but some go really fast.
Some of them are also on the sidewalk too, because outside of like driving in the morning and me being afraid of hitting that on myself, by myself, I have young kids on bikes, and as conscious as I am of like share your sidewalk, all of a sudden there's someone zipping by us going 30 miles on the sidewalk, and yeah.
So I think the city has pretty significant flexibility in terms of, you know, regulating use of sidewalks, certainly speed, requiring limited, you know, lighting. I haven't investigated drafted ordinance, but I don't know if there's any apparatus the city.
Well, I would be in favor of looking into how to slow them down, make them. I guess part of it's too, like you're saying, I don't know who yields to who, and little kids on bikes and scooters going 30 miles an hour. I really don't know what's supposed to happen there. I mean, we've been hearing about this since, I think, 2018, you know, when they started being an issue with, especially people in OUP trying to walk out in the community and then feeling like they're getting, you know, buzzed by these things. So they're really efficient ways to get around. It's just a question of, yeah, what we can do to make it more reasonable.
Did you have a threat ordinance, or was that just a proposal?
Oh no, I'd be curious to know. I mean, I've looked at
2018.
I think Dottie didn't really track them. Maybe it's going to be signage or something like that. But I think in looking into it, yeah, I mean, I would be deferential to Steve in terms of what we can do with those concerns of mine.
Then you look into it, Chris.
It's a little off and stuff, but you were talking about work that I was saying, but what do they do? By the hospital.
I'll bring it up at the
I would imagine that people feel like they're getting run over all the time right there, too.
Yeah.
Rumble shirt down.
I got a little thing. That sign, as you come in to University Heights on George Street from the south, the new sign sits down on the pole. And it just looks tacky. Is there a way? Can we just move the sign up to the top of the pole?
So just like a wrench, I can walk over.
I was thinking about doing it.
Yeah. I mean, Russ Boyer has the list, and I've followed up with them on that after the initial request to remove so what happened, the photo enforcement sign, I think, got taken down.
It was above it.
It was above it, or something happened with that. And so when he took one of the other signs down, he did shift the other one. So I thought we gave him a follow-up list that said, hey, please shift these with some more detail to that, but I can just follow up with them. I know he had an injury last fall, so I know he's back at it now, so
yeah,
I'll check in with them, especially since there's no snow on the ground right now.
It's higher than you think it is.
he might be able to get at it easier right now with no snow right now, so.
Great.
I'll follow up.
Can I ask, what was the timeline on those panels on Melrose that would cause closures?
It just depends. It depends on how quickly I get responses from Iowa City to coordinate that into the plan set. But we would need to have a public hearing and then bid it. And then depending on how that sequence goes, it would be basically June.
Gotcha, like this June.
Yeah, okay, that's correct, yeah.
And then can I check in on street lights and stuff like where that is in terms of the, I think it sounded like you needed to kind of start making those decisions for the underground hold of things, is that right? The street lights and like,
for the Melrose Complete Streets project.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I followed up with our sort of like the committee that I've been keeping in touch with, which has mostly been Doug, Lisa, Mayor Fromm, and Troy on sort of that kind of those questions, right? And discussions. And I don't know if we need to get together. I don't know where everybody's at in reviewing that. I think Doug gave me a response, but I haven't gotten responses from everybody on that either. But yeah, so we do need to kind of know what pretty good direction of what type or size and what kind of spacing we need the poles so that I can contact City of Iowa City to notify them where they need to relocate their existing utility ducting. Yeah, that's probably our most time sensitive issue with that decision. So that we know what the impacts are to other people's infrastructure. So determining exactly what that pole looks like is not my concern. It's more like, hey, I got to get these other people moving.
Yeah, you got to know like how far the light is going to.
Yeah. Yeah, so the more detail we know, the more dialed in we can be. But also there's constraints there's constraints on the corridor that are going to probably override some of the throw of the light anyways. But that would be, there's a lot of driveways, right? There's property lines. I know there's consideration to people and their football parking, right? So trying to be sensitive to that and lay those lights out in a fashion.
Oh my God.
That like works for as many people as we can make it work. And there's sanitary manholes, there's storm intakes, there's duct banks, there's gas mains, there's a lot of stuff buried already. There's water main. So there's not like a whole lot of leeway just because we picked this light. So I'm going to keep pushing my design team to just try to help me also, right? Say, this is what makes sense. We've got to find a fixture that works with this layout. Unless the city wants to make a drastic change to what we've been talking through so far.
It's the style like, of light. It's like so minimal importance, but I would love if we could do like street flags on the poles and like wreaths, Christmas wreaths and stuff like that. And I know that that's not of importance, but I think the neighborhood would really like that too. I have a few neighbors that like want to bring luminaries back, and I'm like, I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know if I want to be out on Christmas Eve lighting luminaries on my full corner that I have, but yeah, but I think it would be nice to have that so that it, you know, makes us distinct. And then also around the holidays or certain things, you know, 4th of July we can do flags, all of that stuff.
Yeah, it is such a talked about issue that it would just be nice to know what the, like when you really come down to the measurements, like what are the options for, you know, it sounds like there's a lot of restraints that are gonna limit what we can do anyway. We have the city feedback, you know, from the open house, and I know that's holding things up. It would just be great to get as much buy-in as we can.
I'd be all on board with like making street signs super bougie and old looking and everything, but I don't think everybody wants that. So.
I guess as far as what they look like, I'm not trying to insert myself. The feedback that I reviewed again and I sent out to our committee folks, like a recap summary of sort of what the feedback was that we received. We didn't get a lot of people writing their opinions down on the lighting specifically from the open house, but those that did, generally, I'd say the consensus was that they wanted a more classical, historical feel to the lighting. That's the theme that I noticed. So the options that were presented that were more modern were often actually stated in the responses we received as like, I really don't like this. So that's the feedback that was written down. Now, I don't know if that's, there was a small number of responses, so.
Okay.
As far as my things, all like that, I don't know if anybody else had any other questions. Obviously, we'll have the a draft of the streets and sidewalk budget probably next month at the meeting.
Doug, did you want to add anything?
No, just other than a couple things of Brian, I need to talk about what's out there that needs to get fixed. Kind of put together a pile of list of what's the hottest irons in the fire. Needs to be like a new street. We're working on that. Snow budget should be really good this year. I checked with our local groundhog and he assures me we are going to have another spring. So, if we're going to be good.
You know, Lisa and I are looking at this budget process calendar that Steve Poole handed out. And it says completion today, February 10th, set the date for the public hearing for the proposed property tax levy. And it says that's what it says here. And, you know, that was handed out in, what, December? The public hearing cannot be held until after the Johnson County Auditor has completed the mailing of the truth in taxation statements, March 15th deadline. And we're supposed to have this public hearing March 31st. So we don't have that as an agenda item to set a public hearing. Now, you know, this is that paper. I mean, are we going to have to hold a special meeting? I just want to get some clarification here. You know, I did talk to Steve Cool before he left town, but we didn't discuss this. It looks like, I mean, can we set the public hearing March 10th? I mean, at March 10th or March 31st? I don't think we can.
Publication notice, we have to publish at least 10 days before the meeting, but not more than 20 days before the meeting. Typically, if we did it March 10th, we should be able, that'd be pretty tight with Gannett, because they really want,
we might have to have a special meeting to set the public hearing, correct? I mean, I just don't want to fall off schedule. And this was missed. I'm sorry it was missed.
No, that's...
But I want to bring it to the attention today so that we can, when can we have a meeting to set the public hearing? A special meeting to set the public hearing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just, you know, we just need to follow this schedule. Isn't that right, John?
No, it is. No, Mayor, thank you very much for bringing that up. And I'm fully admonished of just not getting any budget. Maybe focus on the tax levy, but
we should
focus past that.
We should be able to meet on the 24th. And that should be enough time. Because part of that is we need to know when the county is mailing the postcards.
So should we plan a special meeting for that? And we usually do a Tuesday at 7 o'clock.
Tuesday the 24th.
And it could be hopefully just a 5-minute meeting. And we just need to do it in a timely manner so that we hit the deadlines with publication.
Right.
And I'm not an expert on that. You're better at that, Mike.
I think if we were to meet 2 weeks from tonight at the on the 24th, we should have plenty of time. That should work.
Well, February or March?
Yeah,
February. 2 weeks from tonight.
Is it particularly the 17th also?
He's setting the
17th of February. Yeah.
Next Tuesday.
Let's see, today. Okay, today's the 10th, and that should be next week.
Either would work, because we already know the date of the public hearing.
Right, we know the date of the public hearing. That's why I'm saying the 24th, we should be fine.
No, the date he has is March 31st.
The council has adopted a resolution setting a hearing for March
31st. So what
said, if we hold the meeting on February 24th, we set the date of the hearing to be March 31st. That gives us plenty of time to publish within the guidelines and everything else. That should be fine.
February 24th, which is a Tuesday?
Right. It's 2 weeks from tonight.
Okay, at 7 p.m. Okay, and that gives us plenty of time to set it for March 31st.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. But good catch. And so we need at least 3 council members present. And then somebody else can either call in or be on Zoom or something. But we need 3 in person.
Right.
And so thank you. Okay, we'll set that date. Thank you, everybody. We went through that, and Doug, and then did you have anything else, Tim, with your building zoning and sanitation? You were working with LRS a little bit.
Throw those away.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, and then Lisa, you sent your e-government report. And, you know, we do have to think about cleanup day a little bit, because I know, John, you're on top of the cleanup day. And you had suggested, what time was it last year you had put in my notes somewhere? I think it was April 22nd or
May.
It was May?
Yeah, we did May last
year. I don't know. I was looking at too many days. Sorry.
We've been trying to have it as late as
possible. You want it as late as possible.
That's
so.
Can I ask, were we under budget at all because of, it seemed like the leaves didn't really fall at the right time last fall. I didn't know if we cost the same for those pickups. Like if we could do more pickup in the spring. I don't know. It seems like there's a lot of.
Oh,
did we miss that the leaves fell really late and you kept pushing to have
well,
and it's not.
My husband sucked it up not even that long ago again. I mean, there's just leaves. Right. We need to really look at. Oh, that's what I was thinking. The leaf. Yeah, the leaf day was something like April.
April 7th
last year. But, you know, we're supposed to have a pretty good spring. So I don't know. But
that sounds right. I mean, people get back from spring break and it's kind of they're all really nice enough to get stuff with it.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, that might be good. Somewhere right in there. And then I was thinking the cleanup day with the dumpsters and all of that, and that's in May. I just wanted to bring those up because you brought them to my attention and I went, yeah, we need to check those dates. And if anybody has suggestions, say those dates. So thanks, Lisa, for keeping everybody updated on the water issue, lack of water issue. And all that, and Troy. So then, any questions for Lisa? And then announcements. I guess we're having a special meeting on February 24th at 7 p.m. Any other announcements? Is there any objection to adjournment? Hearing none, meetings adjourned by unanimous consent. Thanks, everyone.